Hello, this is Tamiko Faison, your host for Therapy Entrepreneurs and Leaders of Color, a podcast dedicated to showcasing, supporting, and sharing the stories of therapy entrepreneurs and leaders of color around the world. It is a good day. It's actually Good Friday, and that is a very significant day for me, but regardless of your religious background, it's a good day. If you are listening to this podcast, that means you have the ability to hear, and that's a good thing. But I won't get on my soapbox about the importance of being grateful and having a positive mindset, particularly during this time when we're dealing with a pandemic. It's April 2020, you all. I don't have to get on that soapbox because I have an amazing guest today who is all about being positive and being optimistic. Dr. Brittany Connors is an optimist, therapist, and speaker who has an infectious passion for people. As an occupational therapist, she understands how important engaging in daily activities and doing are to sustaining function, health, and wellness. She is on a mission to prove that growing older doesn't mean growing colder. Amen to that. It doesn't mean disconnected and being distant from our best selves. You can usually find Brittany smiling, laughing, or dancing in her spare time. And I can attest to the smile. She has a big, beautiful smile. And most importantly, Brittany loves to pour her life into others as a way to help others realize the endless possibilities of doing, being, belonging, and becoming. So welcome, Dr. Connors, to the show.
Hey, thank you.
You're welcome. Now, I read your bio, which I think is a really interesting bio. You know, you don't say anything about your credentials here. You're just talking all about optimism. And I can appreciate that. So in your own words, can you tell me about yourself? And I usually say, tell me about yourself and how you became interested in OT. But I want to add to that, if you can tell me how you became so happy, how you became so optimistic.
Okay, cool. Well, yeah, thank you for having me. I'm so honored to be here. So I'm Dr. Brittany Connors. I'm born and raised in St. Louis. This is my home. I'm 29 years old, and I've been practicing for going on 6 years. I became interested in OT after finding more about it through career tests. I actually started college at St. Louis University as a biomedical engineering student and quickly learned that that wasn't where I needed to be. And so after taking tests, numerous tests that said OT was my number one and number two match, I researched it and instantly fell in love. So that's how I found OT. And as far as me being happy and optimistic, honestly, like... For as long as I can remember, this is how I've been. I'm a busybody. I have so much energy. And my mom has always said, you really need to find a way to like give that to other people because you have so much of it. So I don't know. I think it's just who I am and being blessed to grow up with such a great family and people who have always supported me, but seeing the light, I feel like I'm attracted to colors. I'm attracted to things that illuminate the beauty and the truths about things. And so that's, I don't know, I think that contributes to my hopefulness and my confidence for a better and a different future.
That's awesome. So this is just kind of innate. Like you don't ever remember, like even in hard times, you're able always to see positivity in the hardest, like if you look back on the hardest times in your life, you feel that you were always able to see the positive light during those times as well?
Yeah, I believe so. And two contributing factors to that as well was my mom. Like definitely my mom has the spirit of a million suns, meaning she's so warm, she's so loving. And introducing me, I know we were talking about Good Friday, introducing me to faith and believing that God has us, God loves us, and God loves everyone. I think that embedding that in me and spending time with my mom in church and understanding that my faith was my rock was also what helped me really cope with and see the light in difficult times.
Okay. And it sounds like that faith also took you into entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, it had to.
It had to. Okay. I want to hear more about that. How did it have to take you into entrepreneurship? Let's talk about your entrepreneurial journey and how faith played a role in that.
Oh, yeah. So it played a major role because it was nothing that I saw coming. If you would have asked me, like, even 2 years ago, I would have been like, oh, maybe or sometime in the future. But it was hearing a voice one day while I was on a plane. So I was actually presenting at the World Federation Occupational Therapy Caucus, and it was held in South Africa. And on my way there, I just heard a voice that said, you know, it's time to jump. Like, you've been an excellent team player. You have been like so faithful and following, and now I want you to lead. And so it was like from that moment, it was a leap of faith, literally, even though I was that many miles high in the sky. It was very, it was very meaningful to me in that, like, I had to take a literal jump from that point and I never looked back. And so that's really how I started. Like, I had ideas in the future of how I wanted to fill gaps in the community, because I have really focused on community-based mental health and being able to work for great places like the VA, like St. Louis University, working with veterans who were unhoused, working with people who were in jail and prison. I always loved finding loopholes and finding ways to better serve people. And so hearing that voice and taking that literal jump of faith into entrepreneurship is what led me here. And it has been hard. A part of what I do now is doing groups with entrepreneurs at a local co-working space here in St. Louis, because I experienced all the ups and downs, and it was nothing but faith that got me through. I've been on the other side. So I did case management and OT in different roles, and I remember vividly going to places trying to advocate for my clients to have their utilities paid or their rent paid. And I have been in that situation where I had to use those skills for myself, because there were times when cash flow was really different. It would ebb and flow. I would be having money coming in pretty regularly and consistently, and then it would be like 4 weeks where nothing would come in. And so that's hard, and that's really tough on your mental health. And those are the times that we often aren't able to talk about because we're going through it. And some of it also too may be embarrassment, may be feeling like I never thought I would see myself here. But optimism has really helped me see that as just another great opportunity, also to teach me how important we are as OTs. I don't even think we understand how much hope we give people. And for my world to come full circle, and I was on the other side of that, I was like, man, I don't even think that my role and what I knew my role, I don't even think I grasped what I probably meant. And not just me as the person, but me as the OT, being the person who was being holistic and treating the entire person and focusing on the doing and what needed to be broken down, when shame, when guilt, when fear, and all these things, and just being plain old scared, like when those things kicked in, and being so honored that people allowed me to walk side by side with them. So yeah, this walk has definitely been about strengthening my faith. I feel stronger than ever, and I know that there are more detours, there are more dips to come, but if I've gotten through these things, I know I can go through and get through whatever comes in the future.
That is so inspiring, and yeah. I can relate. Being an entrepreneur now, my therapeutic solutions in business for 16 years now, going on 17 years.
Come on.
And thank you. And the ups and downs are real, particularly in social entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. I think there's ways to make profit, but when you're going into spaces where no one has been and you don't necessarily have a mentor to help you navigate those spaces, mm-hmm. cash flow can become an issue. So I've been there, and I've often thought, especially during the times when I'm going through that, and you know, when I've gone through that, you know, why is this happening? You know, I'm trying to do right and I'm trying to serve. But in hindsight, it makes me think about what you just said, because you've been there, you can help other people. So now with COVID-19, you know, businesses are being impacted around the world. And I'm able to easily say to other people, as you probably are with your optimistic view and your previous experience, it's going to be okay.
It will pass.
We will get through this. It's not going to be, you know, the end of the world. Mm-hmm. Now tell me more about your business. What's the name of your business and what do you do?
Yes. So the name of the business is Optimistic Theory. And what I do is community-based mental health. And so I do consulting with different businesses on trying to improve wellness programs or even bring wellness programs to different community settings. I'm doing research right now with St. Louis University. I'm a mental health first aid instructor. And so we're actually doing some really good research on African immigrant and refugee populations and access to mental health and how can we strengthen that. I also see people one-to-one for coaching and for sessions, breaking down activities that are difficult for them. Typically from a prevention standpoint, meaning like I try to get people before they're in crisis mode, but they're understanding, especially for entrepreneurs, like I know this rough patch is about to come, but I've been dealing with this trauma related to money. How can I make sure that I address that while becoming well enough to like keep running my business, keep my life, you know, in as much balance as I can, and also like still find time to be a person and have fun and all of these things. So I do a little bit of everything. I'm a keynote speaker and I really love speaking to audiences and inspiring and pouring into people. I'm also an on-air radio expert here in St. Louis with 95.5 The Lou. We do wellness segments called Wellness Wednesdays. And so I'll be featured for the entire month of April and whenever they need me. But yeah, I just kind of like jump in and I try to like find new projects that, and really I insert myself because, you know, we know a lot of people don't know about OT. So instead of asking all the questions, could you use one? I really like show up and say, here is how OT can help you save money, mitigate risk, and make money and make your communities well and keep people doing their meaningful activities longer and more engaged. So yeah, like that's what I do. And I have had so many pivots. If you would have talked to me 6 months ago, I would have been doing like community mobility things. So making sure that people aren't just stuck inside of their home because of their abilities, if they have to use equipment or a power chair, making sure that people understand they need to be out in the community as well. And how do we build OT sessions around the skills that they need to make a successful community integration possible? So I've been round and round. I feel like I'm still finding my focus, but with every pivot, I get closer. So yeah.
That's great to hear because too often I hear occupational therapists say that they can't work in community mental health, mm-hmm. which is, it's just a myth. You know, this is where our roots are, the profession's roots. And it's nice to hear that you insert yourself into the community. And you're right. Sometimes when we're articulating what OT is, you get people, you know, with the raised eyebrows, like, what? You know, can a recreational therapist do that? Why would I pay you to do this? And sometimes the best way is to show them that there is a difference. It may look like we're doing similar things, but the process, the task analysis skills, the ability to be able to scan the environment, the type of assessments we do, the outcomes, they are different. It is a different profession and it has a very unique and distinct value. And it's great to hear that you are working in the community on many different levels, you know, with individuals, with organizations, and speaking, putting yourself out there and helping our profession really to become what that vision was. I think it was 2017, that centennial vision, when they said widely recognized. Mm-hmm. And the only way I think really to become widely recognized is to merge into other systems. That's why I think interprofessional relationships are so important and are now seem to be more on the forefront within allied health professions. But it sounds like you're like 10 steps ahead of the game. And you know, at a young age too. So it's very impressive.
And I think it just has come from the experiences I've had and just the questions. Like I had really strong professors and fieldwork educators who really pushed me to challenge the system. Like I was taught, you don't come into something and leave it how you found it. Don't come and assimilate or be comfortable. And like jail, like working in jails really taught me that I could come in and I could use the same language that is dehumanizing, but how does that set me apart? I look like the system. So you can be in systems and not be of the system. And so I'm thankful for my professors for really empowering me to ask those challenging questions, to step in the gap, and to take critical action. You know, it's one thing to be reflective and wonder how we can make things happen. And then there's that extra piece of doing critical action, of just getting busy, getting the connections and making the relationships that you need to move goals forward. Because even though we come from different aspects, there are oftentimes common goals that we can work together and we can amplify what's already happening. So I know that's some of the concern that happens when I talk to community settings. Sometimes it's like, it feels like it could be a threat or a duplication. And what I have learned to do from mentorship is to learn how to amplify, like, how do I come in and supplement what's already happening, but maybe it's not being done. And so that keeps my problem solving skills and my creativity skills like at a peak at all times, because I constantly have to learn the language of the setting. I have to learn what's important to them, and I have to know what they're doing now so that I can effectively present something that will truly help, that's not being done or that's not being run well.
A lot of great points. I mean, so much wisdom in what you just said. You know, collaborate and not compete. So that they don't see you as competition, but you're coming in, you're and collaborating. I've worked with therapists before who will go in and say, well, OTs can do this, this, and this, and that can be seen as a threat. So being able to, like you said, learn the language of the setting and know what's important to them, and to talk about what they're doing great and how you can supplement that and not compete with it. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you have a lot of leadership roles. We kind of are going into the next question. You talked about being an expert and being featured for the whole month of April. How
yeah.
is that for our profession? I can't wait to listen to those shows. And it sounds like you've presented at the World Federation of Occupational Therapy. Tell me more about other leadership roles.
Yes. So I would say I also have served as the Missouri Black Occupational Therapy Caucus president for the past 5 years. I did step down as of this year just because my entrepreneurial duties were picking up and I didn't want to feel like I wasn't giving it my best. But shout out to MBOTC. That's my family. So that has been like a leadership role that I've had. I'm also working part-time right now at Microsoft as a product advisor. And so I'm trying to merge tech and OT. Microsoft has an amazing adaptive gaming system, and it's like the only one of its kind. And so coming into the company and trying to figure out where I fit or where I can help, it was immediately an idea about accessibility and truly helping Microsoft live out its mission to empower every person and organization to operate at their best. And so like right now I'm working with my store management about how do we get more people into our stores, of course, when they reopen, because we do a lot of community events, but we don't have as many events surrounded around ability and having gamers with all types of abilities come in. So I'm really trying to drive that force while I'm there, as well as learning some more crucial and critical business skills. I think that would probably be where I say like my leadership, I won't say it ends, but like any official roles. But again, I always try to jump in my community. There are efforts here to really serve justice to those who are incarcerated. So I've been a part of groups like Action
in St. Louis here to make sure that people can understand and adequately absorb and consume political information, because we know that some of the language and some of the policies and even procedures can be very difficult for people to engage in at a level where they feel confident. So I just try to jump into different community aspects as well. But yeah, and I do mentorship as well. Like, there's tons of students that I talk to either just on social media, like Instagram, like we'll have conversations, or Facebook, or I have students that we'll talk like weekly, like we'll set an hour aside, and I'm more than happy to do that with anybody, not just students, other practitioners. I love getting together, holding each other accountable, but also having a safe space to like really share and vent. And with my students, I do the same thing, even though, you know, I may have more experience or I'm on a different path. Like, I tell them what makes me sad, what makes me mad. You know, I really try to connect and eliminate what can sometimes feel like a hierarchy. Like, I never want anybody to look at me and say, oh, you know, you're at this certain point, you're above us. I'm like, no, I'm with you. I experience the same things. It might look different, but I have down days. As optimistic as I am, I am realistic. And there are days when I have my bad day, and I love to feel everything. I don't ever want to run away, and I try to be vulnerable and be open with that about students, because they have such great aspirations and they put so much pressure on themselves because they want to be the best therapist they can be. But I also try to be a sounding board of like, let's integrate this differently. Let's look at this differently. So I think I really take leadership seriously in that I'm really trying to touch people individually and as genuinely as I can.
Yeah, it sounds like you have formal leadership roles, and then it sounds like you're just an everyday leader.
Yes.
Which, you know, sometimes doesn't Thank get you. The same recognition, but it's just as Thank important you. As those formal titles. I'm curious about the Microsoft. How did you get that? How did you get that job? I'm curious about it.
Sounds random, doesn't it? Okay, so let's loop it back to the entrepreneurship journey. So this was at the point where I was like, yo, I'm going to need a job and I need money because my bills need to still be paid. So, which was a really hard point. You know, like I went a full year, you know, with funding myself and not having to be in an organization. And it was amazing. And then coming to this very crucial decision of, as much as you want to continue this way, you realistically cannot. Looking at the numbers, I've tried to get better of tracking my finances, both for the business and myself. And it came to the point where you need income, you need something. And so I knew that I didn't want to just get any job. I wanted to be thoughtful and I wanted to be strategic. I tried to get a few OT jobs. What I quickly realized was that it needed more of my attention, right? And so I said, okay, I can't do this, because if I have to still write notes and then communicate so that we have this excellent quality of care, there's no way I can do both. So I X'd that off. And then some of them, I wasn't getting callbacks because my experience looked different for the past year. So of course, you know, employers would have valid questions about like the gap or what I was doing. And so I was like, okay, you know, that's fair. I'll try to move to my next options. And then I thought about jobs where I could work part-time and still get full-time benefits, right? So try to be strategic, because I need healthcare and I need things to be building as far as 401k and access to the things that I was used to getting while I was fully employed. So then that narrowed the list down even more. And when I found Microsoft, I realized that I had a connection from a networking event that I went to earlier in the year. And she let me know that my expertise and my experience would be a great crossover. And also Microsoft empowers people to build their own brand. So not only do they know I have my own business, they support it. They want you to come and they want you to learn what you can while you build yourself. And so I mean, that just won me over. Also realizing that tech is not going away. Tech is the future. And I want to stay in line with the trends. So when we're talking about data and AI,
and even adaptive and assistive technologies. It's in tech. And so I want to be right there. And it just felt like a really good natural fit, but it had a lot of bang with the benefits and it's fun. I'm learning new business skills that I feel like I missed or I didn't have the opportunity to gain in OT school. Like I said, I went to St. Louis University, phenomenal program, has definitely contributed to why I am the OT I am today, but we didn't have a business like sector. We didn't have it and it wasn't really encouraged. And so when I want something, it's like, how do I go get it? And it felt like a good move and a strategic move was to join Microsoft. And it has been the best decision for a lot of reasons. And even right now with COVID-19, like I'm a part-time worker and I'm still getting fully paid and I will be paid for the next few weeks until they say, you know what, like we have to do something different. But I feel so blessed because I know everybody, especially a part-time worker, like I know people don't get opportunities like that. So yeah, that's how I ended up at Microsoft. And before this started happening with the stay-at-home orders, I began to shadow our business team. So right now, Microsoft has an emergency remote operations team, and I opted into that team to learn more about the business track so I can strengthen myself for Optimistic Theory, as well as help Microsoft carry its mission forward. And I want to know all the cool business things and things that I thought were too over my head or I could never do that. I'm doing that. And it's scary. It's challenging, but I'm in a place where I got that just right challenge with Microsoft, honestly. And so I'm just very happy about that.
And you know, you all can't see Dr. Brittany Connors, but she said it's scary, but she smiled. And I really love that, because there's some people when they're saying it's scary, you know that fear is going to hold them back from doing whatever it is that they truly feel they're called to do. And fear, you know, people that take these big leaps of faith like you and I and other entrepreneurs that we know, doesn't mean that they don't have fear. They just embrace the fear and just say, you know what, the feeling is there, but I'm just going to keep stepping and keep moving. A few points I wanted to make, and you talked about entrepreneurship education. I'm such a strong advocate for entrepreneurship education for occupational therapists. And mm-hmm. I think as we have more conversations about an entrepreneur, share their story about some of the difficulties and the challenges, I think the profession will step up more in terms of having either courses as part of their curriculum or electives or distant education, you know, more networking events. I think it's coming, but it's going to take entrepreneurs pushing for it because we have the experience and we know what would have helped us to be more successful earlier on. And the other thing I wanted to point out is the networking, the importance of networking, how you emphasize it. It was really about a relationship.
Yeah.
You know, you went to this networking event, you know, some people go to these events and they're passing out cards and they don't follow up. They don't build relationships where there's some trust and there's some continued dialogue between, but obviously you made an impression on this person at this networking event to the point that when this position came open, she said, oh yeah, OT, perfect fit for this,
right.
For this position. So that has a lot to say about your, your ability to articulate your value.
Yeah, I would definitely agree to that. And it started very early on, being puzzled why after so long, so many people don't understand OT. That puzzles me still. It bothers me if I'm being completely honest. And trust me, I love a good meme. I love a good laugh just like everyone else, but like, I just don't think it's funny, you know, to continuously be in this space where people don't get us, they don't know what we do, and it really adversely affects our students and practitioners. Like, I don't know how many people I've talked to that says, you know, it makes me feel like I need to give up, or I went into the wrong profession, or I feel so overlooked because of that. And it's not that we need the recognition, but it's more so that we can be in a place to help others when it's more understood. You know, if we don't have to think twice about it, or, you know, get tripped up up on what it is, like that means we can just come in and do our job, our research. Yes. We can come in and help. It really saves time, but it hurts the confidence of the people within the field. And so I think I learned early from not feeling, that wasn't a good feeling for me. And so I wanted to make sure that I could really tell people and really let the value shine. So I want to loop it back to what you first said, like my bio has nothing in it about my credentials, accomplishment. That's because I'm a firm believer in letting the work speak for itself. So when you see me and you meet me and you know me, you're going to know what OT is, because I'm going to show you functional solutions. I'm going to make sure that you know, even if it's one thing, that by the time we end this conversation, you're going to have a better understanding, or you're going to know what occupational therapy is and why you need it and why you need to pay for it, because we are such a loving and compassionate profession. I think we give too much away. And so this past November, I was the keynote speaker for the AOTA and NEBCOT student conference, where I talked about entrepreneurship. And it's like, you know, we can still give and give back. Don't get me wrong. It's not all about the money. But let me tell you, where money is being spent and how budgets are formulated, that tells you where the value is allocated. So if it's not with us, that means that there cannot be a value that can be seen both tangibly and also in the minds of people who we're trying to do business with and the communities who we're trying to work with.
That's a great, great point. You know, I hear it so many times through my consulting, when therapists are really, really nervous about, I'm charging too much. Oh, I can't do that amount. I'll look at it and I'll say, oh my goodness, this is all you're going to, oh, I can't charge more than that. You think I could, you know, just not confident and understanding their value. And you're right. You know, one of the things that I spoke to someone about when they were talking about therapists and the amount that they charge, I said, well, what do you think the insurance is paying these large agencies? So you're telling this person they can't charge this amount, yet you want them to work for a company that's making, some of them, you know, making the millions of therapists, and not necessarily the most ethical. I'm not calling anybody in particular out, but I've heard way too many stories about therapists, you know, working extremely hard and wanting to be ethical, but the culture of the setting is so focused on profit and productivity that it's very difficult to provide, you know, optimal occupational therapy services.
Yeah. And I think that leads to burnout. It leads to disappointment. And like I said, I think it leads to people questioning. And I want to be transparent in that, you know, I felt that way too starting out. I was like, I can ask for this. I can do this. But I learned, and I had mentorship and people to tell me. And I cannot stress enough that I also had people outside of OT help me and teach me and tell me those things, because I did struggle with that too. Like, I never struggled with the value and articulating that and speaking and advocating about that, but the business side was completely different, was completely new. You know, how do I speak to these pain points effectively? You know, speaking to what keeps people up at night. Sometimes, like, it's very much so a reflex to talk about our feelings and talking about, like, more sentimental things, which have value if you know how to construct a story with your brand and with what you're trying to do. But for the most part, those are not going to be the buzzwords for that person who's trying to solve problems. Like, you want the same thing, but you're talking about it differently. And so, like, I would just encourage people who are in that space, charge it, you know, do it, and then go back, like, try it for a few weeks or try it a couple times. And just because it doesn't work with one person, it could work with somebody else, but it's a lot of trial and error. It's also doing your research, like, read these books, read articles, talk to other people who are, you know, setting prices. That helped me too. And it's not to get wrapped up in the competition or wrapped up in what everybody's doing. But if you don't know, you don't know. And so you're going to have to find or, you know, rely on for a bit, rely on some type of template or at least an example of how somebody did it before you. Doesn't mean you have to do it exactly tit for tat, but it can give you a better idea so you can build your confidence and set your own prices. And as like, you know, set your price and live your life, like you can really do that. And it used to bother me when I set a price and somebody said that was too high. And it's like, oh, I need to drop it. I need to. And I learned if that's not the price for you, this isn't a good fit. And that's okay. Like we can both walk away. I can refer you to somebody, or, you know, I can just understand that I need to be targeting my efforts where I know that that price range is not going to be a question, because they're not going to be buying for price. They're going to be buying for what they believe, you know, the value is and how you can help them and how it's going to improve their lives. Because at the end of the day, like people keep coming back because of the relationships, but also because of how it worked for them.
Mm-hmm. The outcomes, the value, yeah. Like I said earlier. Yeah. Let's talk a little about our profession and mm-hmm. the percentage of people of color between 4 and 6 is what I've heard statistically, mm-hmm. which is low. And I know there's things in place to work on that. But how has that impacted your roles, your entrepreneurial or leadership roles, mm-hmm. being a person of color and I'm in this profession?
Yes. So it's always made me want to be more visible just because there was such a low number. Like even in my class, there were 2 people of color out of 60. And so it was always like, yo, and I had a great class. I had a great experience, but just to understand how much more enriching it would have been, you know, had we had more perspectives and different people. So I think just always wanting to be an OT or even a student that says, hey, we exist. Me even leading the Black OT caucus here in Missouri was because of me having this realization that Black OTs existed, right? So I remember being in the program, and one of my mentors at the time, Dr. Karen Barney, told me like, hey, I know it's just you and Aaron, but I do want to offer this as a support. They're just getting together and they want to meet you guys. So first of all, my ears perked up because I'm like, okay, these OTs want to meet us. Like, who are they? You know, as a student, that made my heart just leap with so much joy that they wanted to support us and they didn't even know us. So they formulated an idea to get us together, and they scheduled a dinner. And I remember walking into that room and instantly wanting to cry, because as trivial as it seemed, like I had never seen a Black OT at that point. And to see like 10 to 15 brilliant, beautiful Black OTs around the table, like blew my mind. And it really helped me understand like, yeah, we're here. Like no matter how the numbers look, we do exist. We're here. We're powerful. We're strong. And from that moment on, I was like, I have to give this feeling back to every student, every person that I know, because it changed me. It really changed me. And so I was under their leadership and they said, hey, like, what do you think about taking on this leadership role? And of course I said yes, because again, just having to give back and ensure that a group like this continues to operate. So I'm definitely thankful for the BOTCs, for the COTADs, for everybody who's trying to raise their voices and give support. It means so, so much. And so like knowing that we are in a profession that needs more of us, I just feel like it's a professional duty to reach in the places where they say they can't find us. I'm like, are we looking? I mean, because we out here. I mean, I never seen an OT even growing up going through the hospital systems and healthcare. I never heard. And so now you're going to see me. You're going to hear me just like you're going to see and hear the rest of us. So I love what social media has been able to do with amplifying these beautiful Black voices, conferences, amplifying the work and research and the dedication, businesses like yours, like ours. It's just so important that we lead at all times because somebody is waiting to meet us.
Mm-hmm. And that's such an optimistic answer. You could have went in a lot of different directions, but mm-hmm. your optimism shows through even in that response. So what advice would you give to other therapists of color mm-hmm. who are in the field?
Oh, I would say find each other. We're out here. So if you can join a local or a state BOTC, definitely getting involved with the national level. If it doesn't exist, make it. Even when you're in school, if you're in a program right now, like get together, link up, definitely support each other. It is worthwhile. I would also say don't be discouraged. It means so much to our clients when they see us. And I think that's one of my favorite things, like going into community settings and like I'm out in the community with them, say at a museum or the grocery store, and I get mistaken for their little cousin or for their daughter. Like, I love that we can just like be ourselves. And like while they're getting this amazing like therapy and intervention and support, like I just feel like I can be myself. So And they do too. So don't feel discouraged if you look around and you don't see other people like you or you don't feel like you belong. You do. No, you do. Nobody has to tell you or give you permission to belong. You do. But make sure that you are actively like taking care of yourself, because yeah, let's be honest, sometimes that can be mentally exhausting, it can be angering, it can be draining. However, their support, their strength in the numbers that we do have and in the stories and relationships that we can build, and also like don't be afraid to speak up and speak out. Like, I've talked to students who have told me, I want to ask questions at conferences, but I like will look around and it'll be me. And I feel like I'm going to stick out. Girl, first of all, you do. It's okay. Stick out some more and ask your question, because you should feel like you should be able to ask a question just like everybody else. And what you have to say has meaning and you will help people by speaking up. So yeah, I think that's what I would say. Please be encouraged. Please reach out, link up, and know that you are so, so needed. It lights up our clients to see you, to know you exist. And like for me, getting my clinical doctorate, like even walking in the room and like they don't know who I am when they see my name or when they hear that there's an OT coming, but then when I walk in the room and they just kind of give me that nod or they smile, or you see them physically relax or take that breath, man, that's priceless. Wow. So do it for them.
One thing that you said, Dr. Brittany Connors, is being able to just be yourself.
Yeah.
You know, that it's just very, I forget the word you use to describe, but you were saying, you know, you're in the store and they mistake you for your little cousin. And you're just being yourself. And I know exactly what you mean. I've had these conversations recently about Ebonics and code switching and not feeling comfortable. Is that something that you've dealt with as well? Or when you're not in the setting where, you know, you're getting mistaken for the cousin or you are the only one, you know, really feeling like you can authentically be yourself. It's definitely something I'm working on. And my older son went to a school where there were not a lot of minorities. And then I did the complete opposite for my younger son. It's 100% minority. And I see a huge difference in comfort level with my younger son in terms of, just like he'll say things like, "He's going to school is like I'm at the house." You know, it's like I'm at the house. You know, we say we say some of the same things in class that we say, you know, at school. Versus, you know, having to feel like you got to put on this certain aura. Can you speak a little bit to that?
Yeah. No, that's a lot. That's heavy.
It is.
It's heavy. I mean, because it sounds like I'm similar to like your oldest son, is that like, so St. Louis University is a predominantly white institution. And so like learning really quickly, like, okay, it's two of us. And how does this go? I just always challenge myself to be myself as much as possible. However, you know, just like knowing your business audiences, you do know your audience, you know how, you know, relaxed or a little bit, you know, to the script things might be. So I do my best to try to read where I am, but bring myself there too. So there are places where I absolutely feel like I can completely let my hair down, so to speak. And there's other times where I'm like, you know what, let me warm y'all up a little bit and then I'm gonna get to it, you know? So I think it's all about in the strategy. I think, you know, it's tiring to code switch. So another thing I would say is, I was led to community-based settings too, because I felt like I could be my best self and just be 100% myself. Like, I'm in the community with folks who have different color hair. I mean, I have green hair right now, and that's, nobody's going to blink an eye, or I wear my natural hair. Nobody's going to blink an eye about that because they doing it too. Or, you know, this is what the environment celebrates. So I try to align with community-based settings because I felt like I could be my best self. And then being in these settings, when I go, say, to academia or I go in a hospital setting, oh, I'm confident now, so I'm just going to be myself. And so I'm going to talk more relaxed. Like, don't get it twisted. I'm still educated. But if I'm talking to you like we just sit down across the table from each other, I can still get my point across. And I want you to also feel as confident and comfortable as well. So I think it can be a struggle, but the more I make this walk, and I think entrepreneurship empowers me too in that way, I get more comfortable just showing up 100% of the way I am and talking the way I mean, I will talk in slang in a speech, you know, I will laugh, you know, because I think it's also a way to shake up what we see as professional, right? So like a couple years ago, you couldn't tell me that I would have confidently walked into somewhere with green hair. I can do that because I know my work is not determined by the color of my hair or how my hair looks, right? If this is what's coming out of my head or this is how I want to express myself, the work is still going to get done. It's still going to be phenomenal. And so I think it also changes the narrative of what professionalism is and what it can look like to be more inclusive, but also just celebrating people. Like, we don't have to be afraid of the differences. We don't all have to be the same. And I don't want to come off of an assembly line, so to speak, from a profession that, you know, does its best to make and mold us into the best practitioners, but I still got to have room for my loud and my proud and my Black personality and who I am. So like, I'm a be with y'all all day, but like, if I don't talk the same, or I don't, you know, if I don't speak the same, or I don't act the same, like, that's okay. Like, it's okay if I'm more outspoken. That doesn't make me any less knowledgeable or professional than anybody else. We just have different ways of getting to what we want and what we need for our clients and for ourselves, because, you know, there's plenty of people who feel like, man, I just completely have to like tiptoe and walk on eggshells all day. That's not the quality of life I'm looking for myself or anyone else. I want you to walk boldly in who you are. And even if that takes time for you to order your steps and ask for your steps to be ordered in ways that you can do that and be prepared to do that, practice, do it.
I'm with you 100%. And it's not necessarily the easiest thing, you know,
it's
different people depending on their personalities. But I think, like you said, if you practice it, it is amazing. And it shows that how rich diversity is. And that's amongst, you know, even within cultures, there's lots of diversity. But if we are too afraid to be our authentic selves, then the world is going to miss out. Because our clients, the people that we serve, they're diverse, you know. So it's very, very important. Yeah, now, anything, well, let me, before I ask that question, how can we support you? Like, what's next for you? And how can we support that?
So what's next for me? I was recently accepted into a business incubator, and so I can't speak too much about it because it hasn't been released just yet. But I'll be in this business incubator to ultimately help me understand how to scale and grow and how to run a business. And so I have to come up with a capstone, and which is really just a focus for the next like 9 months or so on how I want my business to operate and look differently after that time. So just keep me lifted as I continue to fail, as I continue to make mistakes. If you see me, you know me, you follow me, you connect with me, either on social media or even through something like email or phone, like just send encouraging words. If you have information, send that too. I am not above from learning from anybody. Like, I'm a student, and first that was in my heart as a kid, and it's definitely in my heart as an OT, but as an entrepreneur, like, we are always learning. So sis, if y'all are bros, whoever out there, if you got information, please share, disseminate that. Help me out. Let me know. Also, I would say like another way to support me is support each other, you know, continue to give to each other. Hold on to your optimism. The reason why my business came about was because when I was working at the VA, I had a coworker tell me, you know, because of who I am, I'm bubbly, I'm bright, I'm optimistic. They said, you know what? Just wait. Life gonna get you. You're not gonna be that happy always. And I said, whew, that's heavy. You know, what a wish to put on somebody's lives. I would never do that, by the way. But it struck me in such a way that I said, you know what? We don't have to accept things as they are. We have the power to change. And so like the theory of it all was like, I'm on a mission to disprove that you can grow older and you don't have to harden. You can be flexible. You can be open to ideas and newness. Don't ever say you too old to do anything. That means you're just training your mind to shut down to new experiences that could cultivate you and that could ultimately change the people around you or just your life in general. So that's how you can support me, is just by promising that you are going to do your best not to let life completely knock you out or knock you over. Keep your heart. We need you. And yeah, that way we can continue to connect more genuinely. We can all elevate. And yeah, definitely support our students. If you're mentoring, give back, give your time. It changed my life, and I know that it can create a ripple effect with others.
I'm so glad that you're able to go past what someone else said about you, because, you know, words have a lot of power.
They do.
And
they do.
We really have to be careful about who is in our circle and what they're saying to us. And we can't always control that. But when someone tries to speak something over your life and telling you what you're going to do, and, you know, and how you're right. going to do, the ability to be able to just have that bounce right off mm-hmm. and say, you know what, your words don't impact my future. Mm-hmm. And to still have that positive, faith-filled mindset, even knowing that failure may be part of the process. You just yes. said, I'm just going to continue to pray for me as I continue to fail. I think Denzel Washington said in one of his speeches, you know, fail big. Just go ahead and just keep failing. And wow. I, you know, as an entrepreneur, it's going to happen. It is yeah. part of the process. It's okay. Mm-hmm. You just get back up and you learn.
Yeah, you learn fail forward. You know, fail forward. Take calculated risk.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Well, anything else you want the audience to know? Like any last pearls of wisdom mm-hmm. or a quote that you want to share?
Man, I think the last thing I just want to share, because it was recently a realization for myself, is create a strategy for your mental stamina and your mental endurance. In this profession, you know, we hear people more so talking openly about things like burnout, and that could even be harder on us, right? Because we're fighting microaggressions and other things as well. But find a way to build your endurance, meaning you can stand the test of time. You can engage in this profession as long as it makes sense for you. I'm not saying if you find out it's not for you, please do what is best for you. However, if your intent is to continue to contribute, make sure you can build your mental stamina. Visualize those setbacks in advance so you can better find your footing, right? Fail forward, because it will happen. It's okay. We all do it. We all experience heartbreak, heartache. You are not perfect. Give yourself some grace, but do yourself a favor and try to think about those things before they happen, because if not, it can feel like you're completely blindsided, and that can lead you to want to give up or become extremely discouraged. So yes, take care of yourself. Take breaks. Please take breaks from social media, you know, at a time like this. Be careful of what you're consuming, even though it's another way of engagement. You do need time to unplug. So please give yourself grace, unplug, and do what you can to be a light for other people and for yourself.
I love that advice. I like the mental yeah. health like strategy. Like we make yeah. all these strategies for our business. We have our SMART goals, but also having that for our mental health. And also mm-hmm. I'm going to take your advice. It's unplugging from social media. I love it for the networking. Like that's how that's how I found you and met you through social media. So I love it for that. But at the same time, I confess, you know, I can get on yeah. social media and time will just go by too much time. Mm-hmm. So I've had to actually set screen limits for myself to make sure that I'm not being too distracted by it. So that, again, is great advice. But thank you so much, Dr. Brittany Connors.
You're welcome.
Delighted to be able to see your face and that big smile and to hear you draw a lot of wisdom. I see the light. And I hope the listeners see the light. Like I said, this is April 2020. We're dealing with a pandemic. There's a lot of anxiety and fear globally right now, but there is light. There are still things to be grateful for. And one of those for me is to be able to showcase entrepreneurs of color, such as Dr. Brittany Connor. So I hope you see the light too. Please spread some optimism today. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast. You can also find it on my website, facingconsulting.com. There's a link to it at the very bottom. So until next time, have a great optimistic day.